Hi, everyone. This is Banu, and I'm happy to be joining you with my first recording of 2024. And I'm especially delighted here to have Greg Danes with me for my first session. Greg is CEO of ChurnRx. Greg helps companies crush churn and scale customer results to reignite growth. I'm extremely excited about the topics we're going to be talking about. I've been part of Greg's classes for the last few weeks and have been learning a lot and had to have him on the podcast to tap into his knowledge. I think it's going to be fantastic, a very, very informative session. So again, thanks for coming and welcome, Greg.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. Appreciate it.
So before we get started, Greg, I think it's important that the audience know a little bit more about you, about ChurnRx, which Kantata is currently going through the program, extremely beneficial. But if you can just tell us a little bit about your background in ChurnRx, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, you bet. So my background is I was actually a founder CEO in the SaaS world, always B2B, and multiple times, and love this space, love what we do. But discovered something that has turned out to be, you know, much bigger topic, bigger than SaaS, bigger than software. And that is that, you know, a lot of things that we are told, a lot of best practices in customer success are actually not right. In fact, one of the things that was fascinating as a, you know, as a leader and how it led me to be in this kind of function is that one of the things that I noticed was that, you know, customers would leave, some customers, and then on the way out say what a great experience they'd had. And that just, like, did not compute. We know happy customers stay and unhappy customers leave. So that started me down this journey, and it's led from one thing to another. Among other things, I now run ChurnRx, which helps companies, you know, reduce churn, improve retention. But among other things, we do this analysis. And the interesting thing about that is it's allowed us to test a lot of our theories. And so one thing I get a lot of joy from and I'm just love about what I do is the chance to work with real data. And one of the things that does is allows us to see new perspectives. Hopefully we'll talk about some of those. And some of those really go much broader even than SaaS. So then that's sort of the world we live in. I do this analysis. ChurnRx also runs training to help with just the core set of playbooks we found are data validated that really drive, you know, customer retention. So that's what we do. It's sort of a data analysis consulting and training company. And I love what we do. We work with terrific companies like Kantata and love, you know, seeing their transformation.
So I know, Greg, an interesting fact for the listeners, you have 3 degrees in economics and you shared that after like amazing charts that you would share that would repeatedly bring out these like aha moments, at least for me. So I know you're going to insert a lot of your data as we have conversations, but again, a lot of the conclusions that you're going to serve are data supported.
Yeah.
But that being said, again, your philosophy supported by data is that, you know, despite sort of the hype that there was around customer experience, not that it's not important, but there's no direct correlation between experience, good experience, and retention, or bad experience and churn. But there is direct correlation with other factors that keeps the customers around. So please tell us what those are and what the data tells you.
Yeah, so it's all based on this thing that we have, which is we more or less have one theory of business. That maybe sound like an exaggeration, but you know, think about it for a minute. We've all known for a long time that fundamentally a business, in order to have a long-term relationship with a customer, has to make them satisfied, has to create a positive experience. We often hear surprise and delight was a very popular way of expressing this. Well, I saw cracks in this early on in my journey as a sort of CEO, founder in SaaS and retention's everything. And so I that first experience that I mentioned where they would leave and say what a great experience is. And then there's a matching one, which is you'd have customers who are unhappy, who are constantly complaining and yet keep renewing their contract. And the combination of those two just did not map onto our basic theory. At least it made me think maybe the theory's not complete. I really didn't appreciate at that time that it was just wrong. So how do we know it's wrong? Where did that go? Well, from there, I started to track it. And I'm an economist by training. You mentioned that. I'm obsessed with this thing that economists know. There's a lot of things they don't know. But one thing they know is, and that is, it's called revealed preferences. Sometimes what people say doesn't match what they do. Right? And so where was all this data coming from about customer satisfaction? It's coming from surveys. We ask customers, are you satisfied or not, or some version of that. And so I thought, oh, I wonder if that's part of the problem. So I started to test it. Now, about 11 years ago or so, there was a book that came out called The Effortless Experience. This was made by the same people who wrote The Challenger. So very interesting. And I love the stuff they do because it's data-driven. It's research. And they had this thing in there that was fascinating, which showed what's the relationship. They had a huge data set, 100,000 data points, something like that. And they had the measurement of customer satisfaction, and then a measure of loyalty, which is essentially how long did the customer stay. And what they found was that there was literally no correlation at all between how satisfied customers reported being and how long they stayed. And this was consumer data, and I thought, well, that matches my experience, but no correlation whatsoever. So anyway, we've been testing it. The good thing is, in the meantime, the lucky thing, I guess, everyone decided to use more or less the same satisfaction scale. Everybody adopted NPS, became the kind of standard. Now, is it a satisfaction scale? No, actually, it asks you whether you would recommend, right, the product or service. But everyone took that to mean satisfaction, and it turns out it does track satisfaction scores that we've measured elsewhere. And we've done hundreds of studies on this. We now have hundreds of, well, millions of records, right? So we have tested this, and the basic question is, does a higher NPS score predict a longer customer lifespan? The expectation will, of course, right? And the answer is no. Not only does it not, there's absolutely no correlation between how satisfied customers are, what their NPS is, and how long they stay. Zero. Not even a little bit. It's not that it's a weak correlation. It has no correlation. And this doesn't matter how many times we test it, we keep adding to it. And it doesn't matter also if we test other scales. So there's other satisfaction scales that are what we think maybe a more like a satisfaction, conventional satisfaction score that also, same result, doesn't matter which version we use. So this is fascinating, right? I expected to think maybe it's not the whole story. No, it's not the story. And so this is fascinating because, like you said, we've actually tested lots of things. We've tested almost anything you can think of. What is the relationship between that thing and how long customers stay? And the truth is actually most things have some correlation. Now, in some cases, it's kind of weak or it's spurious. But the only thing we've ever tested that never correlates with customer retention is satisfaction. And so that just like blows that whole thing up. And it's like, okay, clearly the customers are reporting something. And by the way, we know satisfaction is a thing. We know customer experience is a real thing. And the reason we know that is because we can consistently measure it. That's one way we know that it's a thing. We also know it's a thing because we figured out roughly how to make it better or worse. And there's some pretty consistent ways you can apply to any company to improve or decrease customer satisfaction. So it's a real thing. And it's not even to say it's not important. What this data tells us is that whatever it is, it has nothing to do with their decision to stay or leave. That's a different thing. I think absolutely we should produce customer satisfaction and sort of shame on us if we don't. It's just that we can't assume, and this is the thing that's most important, that it has anything to do with long-term retention, that increasing customer satisfaction will increase our retention rate. Turns out that's not the case. So that's fascinating. And of course, it leaves a giant gaping hole. If not that, then what is it, right? What else could it be, right?
Yeah. So what is it?
Okay.
I mean, so what, that's what I've been waiting for. Everyone's holding their breath.
Yeah. So I said, we've tested tons of things. Some of them have a pretty strong relationship, but nothing even comes close to one particular thing. By far and away, the most predictive factor for how long customers stay is measurable results. Customers who achieved measurable results stay on average 6 times longer than customers who didn't. And if you think about it, the measurable part's really important because actually, if you're not measuring, that doesn't mean you're not getting results. right? So a lot of customers who are not measuring probably are getting good results. But it turns out that only if they measure those results does it have this impact. So, okay, there's an attractive intuition here, right? Which is that we had this idea it was happiness. It's not. But it has to be something pretty compelling. They spend a lot of money, right? It's a lot of trouble. So it turns out, and I hope it's intuitive, like, you know, you should, my reaction to that was, of course. Of course, right? And I had this experience with one of my clients. It was Apple, actually, and they're a very difficult client. Maybe the worst client I've ever had, right? They're always unhappy and they're constantly dissatisfied and they're frustrated and complaining. And I was over there, I worked over there for many years. And at some point I just got frustrated and I said, hey, look, if you hate us so much, why don't you just cancel? And the guy looked at me really funny and he said, why would we cancel when you make us so much money? And you see, my reaction to that was to feel a little bit embarrassed, because why did I ever think it was about anything else? Where did we get this idea that we were doing business together and going through all that trouble so that we could feel delight or joy? No, that's not what it's about. And I think that really grounded me. It really brought me back to, actually, this makes all this, it makes more sense than the satisfaction hypothesis, right? So measurable results are the compelling through line that we see, and we've studied it over and over again. If you get good results, it's a 10 times longer lifespan. If you get zero results, but you still measure them, it still doubles customer lifespan. So the combination of getting results and measuring them is the fundamental issue, and it doesn't matter which business and what industry we look at, it's the same across everything.
So as you know, Greg, our audience are the professional services, you know, leaders, delivery individuals, et cetera. So we've had sessions where we talk about it makes a lot of sense. Results, of course, if I'm getting results, then my investment makes sense. But what is the complexity around identifying the right results to measure? Because we've had sessions, we've talked about, well, how do we measure success, right? And so how do you get to the right results to measure? And how many or too many results? Like, what is the secret sauce there?
Yeah, so I love it. It's a great jumping off point to the next series of places where I stubbed my toe on this journey, right? I feel like I've stubbed my toe on every rock, right, along the path. So what was the next one? Well, all I have to do, this is my simplistic mind thinking, is just find out what their results are, and we'll just make sure we measure those and there's a problem. And this exists across industry. This isn't just a SaaS or software thing. We've seen this in professional services. We've seen it in consumer over and over again. And that is, some customers, when you ask them what result they want, they will define it clearly enough that it can be thought in terms of, well, how would we measure that and what, you know. Some customers, but the vast majority can't answer that way. So there's your next problem. I just needed to know what your results were so we could measure it. And it turns out 70%+ of you don't even know what that is. Well, how could they not know what their result is? They just spent money, or they're using your services. They've created a contract, whatever. The point is, how is it possible that they don't know? Well, the answer is it's a little bit more subtle than that. They kind of generally know, right? Or they wouldn't have found their way there. The problem is, if we're going to get all the way to measuring it and materializing it, I call it M&M, measure and materialize, we have to have thought of it pretty carefully. It has to be defined. So there's problem number one. A lot of companies have a general idea only, but haven't taken it to where they've clearly thought, exactly, here's the kind of result we expect. And then when you get them to that point, and you can, so that's a kind of solve for that, help them kind of think it through, refine it, here's what's actually measurable. Then there's another thing, which is they might think of something as a result that isn't actually a result of the work you do. So then we've got to align around, well, what it is that we actually are helping you accomplish, right? Okay, so, and then that has to be thought carefully enough to be measurable. And then there's another problem, which is, even with all that, they often don't know how much improvement they expect. And very frequently, it's because they haven't even got a clear understanding of how they're performing now. So we have to have a baseline. So, and it ends up, and you, this is why you bring this up, it ends up we have to have a kind of a method for navigating from not really the clarity we need to be able to operate on there to getting to that level of clarity this is a result we actually impact that's important to the business, right? That has to be there. Otherwise, if it's trivial, why would it be the basis for a long-term relationship? Okay. And it's measurable, right? And we can clearly think through how we would achieve that. So yeah, actually, it's not as simple as just asking customers what they're hoping for. Sometimes they're not even hoping for a thing that's realistic or that we even do, right? So we have to solve for that. So there's a whole methodology around that. But guess what? You can do it, actually. You can do it, and you can do it reasonably quickly. And the key is to know, before you enter in that relationship, what are the results we produce? Because they're not infinite. There's not an infinite range of things we do. There's a limited number. And there's an even smaller number that are important, and there's probably a smaller number from there that are measurable and compelling for the basis of our relationship. And so reducing that tends to make this process actually quite a bit easier.
So the results, once you've identified those results and gotten alignment, I would assume then that becomes your raison d'être, like that's your purpose with that customer, and that formulates or provides a framework for your account strategy and how you, the entire organization, I guess, as needed, collaborates together to help customer fulfill that result. But obviously the customer themselves have also ownership in what they need to do to get to that result. So how do you balance those in making sure that the customer is holding their part of the bargain?
Yeah, this is really important because actually the discovery that customer results are everything only begs the next question, which is, well, why do some customers get good results and others don't? And what you find out when you start asking that question is that the customers who get good results, succeed, and stay are the ones who change their behavior in specific ways that take advantage of the services or the expertise or the product that you provide. Okay, so producing results isn't as simple as just measuring them. We had to figure out what they were, and we had to make them measurable. But then, even then, there's another step, which is, now I've got to get you to change in some way. We've got to get you to engage with our services or to take our advice or to use our data or whatever it is you're doing with those clients. And it's not as simple as they just do what you say or adopt your thing. It actually is more complicated. It's like the figuring out what they're trying to achieve. It's a little bit of complexity in that, but not too much. And let me just walk through that. The issue is there's only so many benefits that you provide that we could call a measurable result that's worth working on. Okay, there's only so many things each of those clients need to do depending on which of those benefits they're trying to do. And what we found is some clients show up and they're ready. Like, not only did they kind of know what their result was and how they were going to measure it and what their timeline was and, you know, all those things, but they also had a pretty good idea of what they had to change or adopt or do new in their business, processes they had to improve, change, or adopt. Okay, that's great. I wish they were all like that. The truth is only a minority are like that. The majority don't know what to do. And by the way, that's not so bad. It's not such an insult, right? Because the reality is if they knew exactly what to do, would they really need us? Right? Would they need your company? Probably not. So actually, that's what we're in the business of doing. So the next stage is, if we can get aligned around what the goal is, then what I need to do is to clearly lay out what you, the client, need to do to get that result and get you to engage with that and even commit to it, right? So then I'm in a position to do the most important thing in the whole relationship, which is to leverage your behavior change, get you to change key behaviors. Now, if there's 100 of them, I'm going to fail. It can only be a couple, or the relationship. And maybe if there are several, I might even parse them out a couple at a time so that we can work through that. Because change is hard. Let's not kid ourselves. And so the value of kind of realigning our entire relationship instead of on satisfaction. Because what happens if I think it's all about satisfaction? What will I do? Well, I'm never going to challenge you. I'm never going to argue with you. I'm never going to contradict you. If you guys say we're doing it this way and that's the wrong way, well, I'm just going to let you do it because I don't want to jeopardize the satisfaction. But if it's all about results, now the details matter. Now, if you're going about it, you, the client, are going about it the wrong way, we're going to have that conversation. I'll find a nice way to say it, but we really do need to address that. So leveraging customer behavior is everything. So there's what I found from this is that there's sort of, I've derived three laws, I call them, of customer retention. Number one, customers stay to get results. Number two, customers get results when they change their behavior. And number three, customers will change their behavior when they know why and how to change. So we have to lay out that motivation by aligning around that goal, and then we have to show them what to do and help them do that. That's kind of the magic formula right there.
So whenever around this whole customer success conversation, that it seems like customer success may be tied to brand and other pieces of success of a company, but not necessarily retention, as you mentioned. There was a whole aspect of customer journey, and you look at the entire journey and make sure that there is satisfaction in every step. I wonder how that customer journey then fits in to running results, meaning does it start as early as prospecting? If someone was remodeling, right, the journey and now fitting in the whole result conversation and approach, where would that start from your perspective? What makes sense?
Yeah, so the customer journey thing has been very popular. And the method, I think, fundamentally perfectly matches the theory of business based on customer satisfaction. Essentially, what you do is you look at all your touch points with the customer. You can go as early as you want. You probably should. And you think about how to redesign that interaction, that experience, to maximize the experience, improve the satisfaction, reduce the friction, whatever, all those things. And then you sort of do that first, second, third, fourth, and you go through that whole process. When you make the shift to thinking in terms of customer results, that actually changes. What we're doing then is we're actually thinking about, well, I need an outcome. The theory basically says, and the data backs it up, that if they have a measurable result, they'll renew and probably expand, by the way. Okay, well, in this scenario, that journey approach just doesn't work very well. We kind of mm-hmm. need to take the opposite approach, which is to reverse engineer. Let's start with the end, the outcome, which is I need a measurable result, and then we're going to win. So then back out of it. What would need to happen for that to be true? Then what would have to happen for that to be true? And I work backwards. So that's one consequence, is that I think in a results-driven journey, you reverse engineer it backwards, right? Even all the way up into marketing, actually. The thing actually becomes very coherent when you think, well, what is the first thing I would want them to know? After you've backed out of it, you can really come to think in that level of granularity, and it's very functional. So the sort of backwards engineering, I think, is a real key shift in the approach that we have to take. And when you do that, you actually end up with a different journey, right? So yeah. Instead of just saying, I want to optimize this journey, you think, what's the journey? Now, if at that point it's time to apply a customer experience mindset, which is perfectly valid, then you take those steps and you say, how do I optimize those first, second, third, and fourth?
Yeah, so we'd actually had a session, and I think the question that comes up in my mind is commercial models, right? We did a session last year with an IT consulting firm, and they had introduced value-based commercial model into their options for customers. And I know it was a topic that was top of mind. There was a lot of belief that more companies may be moving that way, especially consulting professional services. So just your thoughts based on this result-based philosophy, do you have to go with value-based commercial models? How does it fit in?
It's a great question. So those have kind of come and go in terms of the energy around them. I think for at least 10 years that I've been kind of paying attention, probably longer. And the idea is just so intuitive. It's so appealing, right? Well, if we're fundamentally designing what we do around producing measurable results for customers that have commercial value, that are important to their business, then why not price that way, right? There's a premium potentially for us in doing it that way, right? And I would say, by the way, a side benefit is that when I've seen companies go down this road, they have found that they get more to a certain degree, they get more client attention around the key behaviors. I talked about they have to do certain things. Well, in this scenario, I'm going to be very aggressive about pushing those behavior changes on you because I'm not going to get paid unless you win. So it has those benefits. One interesting thing, though, that we found in the data, and this ought to be apparent, but it didn't occur to me until we really dug into the data, and that is that it didn't actually matter what the payment structure was for the impact on customer longevity. So customers who had measurable results stayed 6 times longer. That can be much higher in some cases. Customers with good results, it's 10 times. Customers, by the way, with exceptional results, it's even higher. And virtually none of the companies we're talking about were using a value-based or results-based commercial model. And that's interesting. So my point of view on this is that I find them interesting. I think it's fascinating when companies do that. And I think that they're only because I have some experience with it, that there are some challenges and complexities to doing that. It's not as obvious to customers that that's what they're asking for, by the way, as one of the downsides. It seems like, well, then every customer should want that. That should be the most attractive business model. It surprises me, and it's fairly consistent how rarely customers think of it that way. They often react with, and this may be your experience or not, but they often react with, well, I guess we could do it that way. They really aren't expecting it. And I think that's a downside in a sense, because that would have been the biggest value is, well, now everyone mm-hmm. should sign up. But actually I don't think that's the experience many of them had. If you know of one that's different, I think that would be very interesting. I am interested. But the other thing is, well, not only is it not a just complete game changer where you destroy all your competition and you get all the clients in the market, but also it doesn't seem to make that much of a difference in terms of longevity. You get the kind of benefits I'm talking about even without shifting to that kind of a commercial model. And, you know, clients are comfortable with a lot of the existing commercial models that have been around for a while. So the reality is, the transformation doesn't really come when you shift to that. Although I think that's interesting, and I'd like to see it happen more. The win is just getting to a point where you orient like you're operating that way, right? You orient like you will live or die on their results. And if you operate that way, customers meet you there. They transform how they operate, and the results are phenomenal.
So it comes back to authenticity. If you all believe truly in those results and you're acting in a way that reflects that, then that's significantly more important than any commercial model.
Yeah.
Which makes sense intuitively to me as well. And it is complex. Value-based commercial models are not easy to administer. So in some ways, this is good news for me, I think, as a practitioner. But that being said, Greg, I never tire of having conversation with you. And you know I have infinite questions, but have to draw the line somewhere. And just wanted to ask you if you have a message you wanted to leave with the audience before I get to my personal question on the personal level.
No, I think we covered a lot. I think it's fascinating. Whenever I talk about this, people share, oh, that's exactly my experience. And they give examples, and they also share things that are really fascinating about different aspects of this. So please reach out to me if you've heard this and think, you know, there's something to share. I'm very interested in meeting people who are doing this or learning what they've shared.
And people can connect with you through LinkedIn. I'm assuming mm-hmm. it's the best way to connect with you.
LinkedIn or my website, gregdanes.com. You can find my contact information and reach out.
Fantastic. Now let's get to the special question. Can you tell us about a mentor, someone who's been influential in your life and your career and has gotten you to where you are today?
Oh, interesting. So yeah, actually there's, as a kind of senior executive, I went back to school. I went to MIT, to the Sloan School of Management, studied business and actually a combination of economics and business. And I met the strangest, most fascinating character there, a guy named Arnaldo Hacks. He's now passed away. I think it was just last year. And Hacks is this fascinating character. He was Chilean. And it was relatively late in his career, but he had some just mind-blowingly brilliant insights. And one of the kind of core ideas that Arnaldo would explain was, what was fundamentally wrong with our idea of business strategy. And he would talk about how business strategy sort of came out of World War II, and it was all based on war. It was like competing against, everything was a rivalry. You know, you think about Porter's Five Forces, you're rivalrous with everything. It even characterizes your relationship with your customer as a rivalry, which is incredible. And he talked about, you know, strategy isn't war, it's love. And it was just this corny, but then he would get deep into what he called customer bonding. And it really changed my thinking, because the idea of customer bonding was that you exist to make your customer successful. And therefore, you're less about, your business isn't really about the product that you sell. It's about the result you provide. So the joke that he would tell, but it's kind of serious, is, you know, if tomorrow you discovered that a new kind of shoe would make your client more successful and get better results, you'd go source those shoes and sell them to your customers, because you're not a software company or a, you know, expertise company or professionals. You're a results company. And that shift creates that bonding, which is much more powerful than loyalty. Much more powerful. And that insight was really incredible, especially because Arnaldo was an old guy. He didn't actually know anything about tech. He didn't really foresee, you know, the way that SaaS or the way that, you know, the whole subscription economy would really play out. But everything he said turned out to be incredibly prescient, and it just changed my point of view in amazing ways. His book's amazing, The Delta Model. But anyway, fascinating guy.
Fantastic. Thanks for sharing that, Greg. Thanks for being on our podcast, and I hope we'll have you in the future again. As always, thank you for listening to the show. If you have any follow-up questions for Greg or myself, please feel free to email them to podcast@cantata.com, and we would love to answer them and hear from you. Have a great day, everyone.
If you enjoyed this podcast, let us know by giving the show a 5-star review on your favorite podcast platform and leaving a comment. If you haven't already subscribed to the show, you can do so anywhere you get podcasts, on any podcast app. And to learn more about the power of Cantata's purpose-built technology, go to cantata.com. Thanks again for listening.